So, first things first. So, you're asking the question, what are we discussing here? If you know, what's the law? You know, like, how do, if the law is X, Y, and Z,
right.
So then, you know, what are we discussing in all these back and forth? So the answer is that the law that we practice is based on the discussions that we have in front of us. So the fact that there is a Mishnah that has three opinions as to when, until when you can say the Shema at night,
right.
The way we practice is based on the discussions that we have in front of us here.
So which actually is the actual law itself?
So the after going through
that anywhere,
what is it? It's not going to be found here.
Is it found anywhere?
Of course, yeah, it's found. Then you get the Rambam. Maimonides has his 14. It's called the Yad Chazaka, the strong hand, the 14 books. He starts it there, the Shulchan Aruch, which Rav Yosef Cairo penned, and Rav Moshe Isserles put his opinions in.
I get all these commentaries about that.
That's not commentary. That's what we call psak. That's what we call like the final ruling of how we practice. Okay, but it all derives itself from the Mishnah through the Talmud. Through the discussions of the Talmud, through the back and forth, till eventually we, you know, the Rambam, you can see Maimonides looks at these discussions and then he extrapolates from there. He comes up with his conclusions. He bases all that based on the stuff that we studied together. So, we don't do this, but just to give an example, that this to be as really like radical, I could come in. Take the Mishnah and the Talmud, go through the discussions of the text itself without looking at any of the side commentaries. And based on that, I could say, you know what? I think that I'm gonna hold like the one who says that you can only say Shema until the first watch.
I say, yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? Meaning that's...
But where is that written, the actual law itself?
Where's it written?
What's that called?
Okay, so that would be... So you have different... Shulchan Aruch is the most popular... conventional, today accepted law, like where you'd say, I want to open up and read, what are we supposed to practice? It would be called the Shulchan Aruch.
And is that is that those large books that you have with all the commentary around it?
So I showed you, the huge red ones that you saw?
Yes.
That's the Shulchan Aruch, yes.
Oh, okay, fine.
Okay?
Fine.
But the way that Shulchan Aruch, the way that came to be, is it also is an evolution of sorts, because what you have there is the Torah Shulchan Aruch, okay, and that begets the Shulchan Aruch. Now, what do I mean by that?
I get that.
Already in the Talmud, okay, so in the Talmud, so like at the time of the 1300s, Rambam already started doing the beginning of the 11th to the 1200s. He himself wrote his book, which is the first real attempt. Even though I saw somewhere where perhaps it was even already, you know, potentially books that already were telling us what to do earlier than that. But the Rambam, the most beautiful 14 books of just taking every topic and covering it, giving us ways of practice. Okay. But then you had the parallel to that, you had the Tosafists from, so the Rambam lived in Spain and then in Israel and Egypt. Okay, he was Spanish, and you know, and of Sephardic background.
Yes.
Okay. The flip side is that you had the Tosafists that lived in Europe, basically France and Germany.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
and they developed a school. There was a school that the Rashi Tosas that.
Yeah.
They had it with that. From there, you have the Torah, which was Rabbeinu Asher, the Torah, like. Developed his sock, Now, what's interesting is, this is just, they're ready for this one? Rav Yosef Cairo was a Sephardic descent, let's just say, okay?
Yeah.
So now, he's living in Israel, in Sfat. He writes, he takes the Torah, Shulchan Aruch, which was of Ashkenaz, let's call it, of European, and he takes that, and he writes the Shulchan Aruch based on that.
Okay.
But he combines the Shulchan Aruch based on Rambam's writings, Maimonides, and the Torah Shulchan Aruch. And then he combines the two. Okay, so you see like this, like...
Now go back a second.
Okay.
One more question. If you were to extract all the different laws, like You have to say Shema by this time, or you don't. You wrap the filling. That means you have to do it this way. What is that called? Is that called Talmud? Is that called Gemara? Is that called Mishnah?
So the.
And then we can start.
Okay, so. First of all, just like you just said now, how you wrap your tefillin, that's already a whole other story, because that's, but let's say.
Let's pretend that was a law that no one knew what that meant, because when it says in the Torah, you shall bind this.
Right. So that, there's a combination of law, and then there's also custom, right? You'll find okay. that there's,
but,
okay.
But what's called Mishnah, what's called Talmud, what's called Gemara?
Okay. So Talmud and Gemara are the same thing. Okay.
Okay, fine.
Okay, so let's now, based to answer your question properly, we're going to take it like this. And I was going to make a little chart, but it doesn't have to be this.
It's okay. Talmud and Gemara are the same thing. What's Mishnah?
Okay, Mishnah precedes, okay? Okay, the Mishnah is the thing that comes before. Now, what the Mishnah really is like this. Let's go back all the way to Sinai, okay? Moses goes up, he gets the Ten Commandments. And yes. the revelation of the Jewish people, fine. How much, this is a good, important discussion, how much of what we have as the five books of Moses was given at Sinai? And the answer is not the whole thing. Rather, over the 40 years that the Jews were in the desert, Moses was getting prophetic message.
Yes. Okay? Over 40 years, he learned how to be a Jew.
No, not they learned. That the five books of Moses were transmitted over that 40-year period. It was like given in sections, so that you finalize, you have a written Torah, okay, which was the five books of Moses, the Torah
got
scroll.
I got that.
Ready? At the same time, God gave him a what we call an oral tradition, the Torah Sheba'al Peh.
Yes.
At the same time, it was like the instruction manual for this. It was meant to like work hand in hand.
Got it. Okay. I imagine, therefore, yes, go ahead.
Okay. Fast forward. At the end of the Second Temple period, when things started getting a little things were unstable for the Jewish people, right? So at about, let's say, the year 150 Common Era,
right.
Okay, the temple's destroyed in year 70.
70,
okay.
Yeah.
So about 150 to 200. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, at the end of he's actually living at the end of the Mishnaic period, we call it. He says, I got to write this stuff down.
Fine. And that's called Mishnah.
Yes. And what the Mishnah was taking the oral tradition that ran parallel to the written.
Yes.
And he writes it down.
That's Mishnah.
Okay?
That's fine. I got it now. Okay.
But what's the problem with Mishnah? What's the problem, if there's going to be a problem with Mishnah, is that it's very cryptic. And it doesn't, it's like there's a lot of, what's interesting that you mentioned tefillin. I looked this up. There are certain things that really did not get written down in at length in the Mishnah. One of those things was tefillin. So that stayed oral because people knew it. Tzitzit, tefillin were like actually things that people had more of. There was a very widely understood practice and understanding of it. It comes up more in the Talmud. Okay, but let's go back. I shouldn't have.
Okay.
In the Mishnah covers a large segment, if not everything, of the oral, but in a very cryptic way.
Okay, that's fine. That's what the actual oral law is. And is that written anywhere?
What do you mean, the Mishnah?
Yeah.
The Mishnah's
now.
Yeah, we have a Mishnah.
Got it.
It's six sections. Call them starim.
Okay.
And each one covers, there's the acronym is Zman Nakat. Zman is Zraim, which covers what we're doing now. The first one is Brachot, is the blessing, but after that it's all agricultural.
Like damages.
No. So Zman Zraim is all about agricultural.
Okay.
That means the laws of tithing. Because tithing, again, really is connected to produce and things like that.
The Jubilee year and the seventh year thing. Yeah.
Correct. Then Moed is the law. The laws concerning, or the subject matter is the holidays.
Okay.
Moed means time.
Got
it. Zmanim is the laws of Shabbos.
Okay, got it.
The
got
laws
it.
Of Passover are
all
in.
Those are all Mishnahs. Those are all the oral laws, yet very cryptic. And then the other subsequent things are all attempts to.
So then the Talmud Gemara comes and starts to expand
the
Mishnah.
That's left up around the sides.
No, that's the inside. Here, let me get you a picture of. Let me show you
something.
Sorry,
I'm sorry.
No, this is good. This is actually very important because if you don't have clarity on this, you got nothing. Okay, let's see this. I want you to see a. Here, this is perfect. Okay, I'm gonna do a little screen share here.
Okay.
Okay. What's his name's gonna come? Okay. Okay. Let me do a screen share. Okay, screen share.
I think they got enough. Mishnah is like the oral law.
Now I want you to see this, though. Check this out. Okay, so you see the screen?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so what's in the middle, that's the Talmud. Okay?
And where's the Mishnah before that?
So look at this. In this one, do we have it? Wait, hold on a second. What's going on here? Wait, what did I just do? Oh, come on, man. Okay. Wait, why is it not?
I'm sorry, don't worry.
I want to show you this. Hold on a second. Actually, no, let's do this. This is easier. Let's just go to where we are. Okay. This is the easiest way to see it, okay?
Okay.
So you see over here is... Let me just do this for a second. One second. Why is this not... I lost the... Oh, here it is. Okay. There we go. Okay. So... Here in the box, you see my cursor here? Okay, this is the Mishnah, okay?
In the box.
Yeah, and just this is the easiest way to see it. So this whole thing here, until the Gimel Mem, this is all the Mishnah in this case, okay? And then here you see where the Talmud starts, okay?
Where?
Where it says you see where I'm circling there?
Yeah, okay.
Good morning, Lawrence.
Warning.
Okay, so you have, this is where the Talmud comes. So and basically what it's doing here, this is a perfect example of the Mishnah's cryptic, and then the Gemara is going to start here, and the first thing it says, it starts asking where did the Mishnah assume X, Y, and Z?
Okay. So the oral law itself starts with, the first, it says Kivaron.
Korin at the Shema Ba'arvin, Me'ematai.
That's
the Mishnah. Me'ematai Korin at the Shema Ba'arvin. When do we say the Shema at night? That's the Mishnah.
Okay. Got it. And then starting with Gimel Mem.
That's the Talmud, the Gemara. Okay.
Which is the interpretation.
Correct, and that's already coming. You know, it starts right after. It already exists, probably, but like once Rabbi Yehuda Anasi created.
Don't worry about that. I don't care. I just want to know that this is the first, so the very first one up here is the actual Mishnah itself. You've read it before. Kivaron et...
Shema Ba'arvin, right?
Okay.
And then where it says the GM over here, Tanahecha Kai.
Oh, Gemara. Gemara means, okay, that means...
Gemara. That's Talmud, okay?
Talmud, Gemara is the same.
Guys. Same thing.
And English. From the sides.
Then wait, look at this. So this, now you see where I'm over here? This over here I'm going?
Where?
You see where I'm... Okay. That's Rashi.
Okay.
And then on the left, on the outer, it's funny, because is the Tosafot. So Rashi lived in the year 1000, you know, that time period.
Yes.
And then Tosas comes like in the 1300s. They live between France and Germany.
Got it.
Pretty much, that's their thing. Got okay, it. So on the page itself, you see, you know, a number of years of history here. Okay.
Got it.
All right. Good. So now.
Got it. Okay. Sorry. All right. Good.
Okay, no, it's good. And then even here you have on the side another Tosafot, Rabbi, this over here, Rabbi Nissim Gaon. In the back of the Talmud, okay, here, let me see, show me something. Hold on.
Sorry, Lance. I'm just trying to get my.
No. This is good stuff.
This is everything. This is it. We can't study unless we have clarity. Okay.
Yes.
It's actually good because I believe I have a set of Gemara. I think that's what you call it in my garage, and we're going to be working on our garage today, and I'm hoping to go find it so I can have this.
Okay. So this is the Talmud thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, in the back of this Talmud, you also have another. Look at this. This is crazy. But here, you have. This is the Rush. This is again. This is another Tosafist type of time period. He is the precursor. This commentary is actually a precursor to the Shulchan Aruch.
Okay.
Because he starts what the Rush is going to start here. The Torah takes over, his son, starts writing it more formally as a Shulchan Aruch. And then this is 1300s, let's say 12 to 13. His son comes, does his tour. And then the Beis Yosef, Rav Yosef Cairo, who lived in Sfat, he writes the Shulchan Aruch, but he first writes a commentary called on the tour, on the Rush's thing. So it's like you see, one is built off the other.
Okay, got it.
In the back here also, you have a Marsha that comes in the 1500s. He's like explaining Tosos and like other agadic things. Now here, check this out. This here, at the back of the Gemara, also you have the Ran. That's another of the Rishonim. He lived in the 1300s. And then you have other, the Maor, the Balamor, and the Melchamos on the bottom here. But what's interesting also is that this also, the Rif, it's also like going to focus in, it looks like a Talmud over here.
Yeah.
Okay, but it actually is, they cut it down to really also, like what you were asking, like how do they get to the final law? They start doing that. They really try to cut out the back and forth and focus on like. So what do we do? how do we practice?
So go back to the page that you shared there. What is that in the big box? What does that say? Mayamot?
Mayamiti?
Mayamatai?
Yeah.
Over here. So that's that just. Mean? This is like we all see this at the beginning of each tractate. Okay. So like for example, this is brachot, right? You go to Shabbos, and you see how it also has at the beginning. Yitziot Hashabbos Shtayim Shehein Arba, taking out on Shabbos there are two that are equal four. Okay, but that's another Mishnah. Now, what's interesting about this over here, just so you understand, this is the constant when we talk about the cryptic nature of Mishnah. So this is what we're talking about, the idea of the taking out on Shabbos, that's two that equals four. Bifnim, within, and then Shtayim Shehin Arba B'chutz. What does that mean? So the Mishnah here says, Ketzad. Give me an example. If you have a poor guy standing outside, and you have the Baal HaBayit, the owner of the house that's inside, if the poor guy puts his hand in Lifnim, V'natan L'toch Yado Shel Baal HaBayit, and he puts it into the hand of the owner of the house, or he takes it out from the guy's hand and takes it out, then the poor guy has been he transgresses because he's taking it from one domain to the other domain.
Okay.
It's pretty cryptic.
I get it now. Okay. I get it. So go back to the first one, the brachot that we were doing.
Okay. So now.
I want to look at that structure again.
Okay. So you have.
So it starts there where it says.
Me'ematai karanat ha'shma ba'arvin.
Okay.
From when can you read the Shema at night?
Okay.
And what's interesting, by the way, it's not pure Hebrew. There is, or the Hebrew here is, you know, it there is a little bit. I mean, I guess they'll call it like it has like a little bit of an Aramaic touch to it, but it's
okay. That's okay. And so the Gemara Gimel Mem is when you begin. Okay, I got it. We can go. Go ahead.
Okay. So now you see it. And what happens, the Talmud, the Gemara, the reason why you have to like if you, it, you have to be very disciplined, because in order to keep the flow going, Okay, because right, you see, like we've gone on, what we did was we took this Mishnah, and you'll notice how it starts out from when, and then till when.
Okay.
It says from when the Kohanim can come in and eat the Truma until. The first one is the first watch. The rabbis say till midnight, and Rabbi Gamliel says until dawn. Then they have a story. So what do you have? It pretty much, when the Talmud gets into the discussion, first it's not even satisfied with, the Mishnah has a version of, the earliest you can say the Shema at night is when the Kohanim, when the priests come in to eat their Truma. Okay? Then the Gemara has a whole discussion about that. Is it earlier? Is it later? Okay, and then till when? Is it the first watch? What's the first watch? Watches? What do you mean by watches? You know, and then it goes.
All these weeks, you've been doing various interpretations of that.
Yes.
Okay.
That's so exactly.
The PDF that you downloaded that has this little description in English is basically various rabbis from different times interpreting what this means
in the Talmudic times, not different. This is very specific.
So here, time period. Got it. Okay.
Right.
Got
so
it,
when we, okay. So when we go to here now, let's bring that up here. Where is it? It's over here. So when we go into this, okay, all this text that I sent you,
yes,
that's the English version of the Talmud.
Got it.
It's all Talmud here. Okay. If I wanted to play some, if I wanted to do, what do you call it?
So then each week what we've been doing then, we have not advanced beyond this first
Mishnah. Yes.
Oh, my God. You can get lost in this for years just on the one Mishnah.
Yes.
Not lost.
I don't call it lost.
I don't call it lost.
No, but the point is you should know there are different styles of study. So, okay. For example, when you hear people talk about Daf Yomi, you've heard that, right?
Yeah.
So Daf Yomi means that you're going to cover, in a day, I'll cover, like today, I did, before we got together here, I went to a class and we did a full page, which is two sides, A and B, okay?
Okay.
So we did 37A, okay? So we went through this. This is actually about cooking on Shabbos. You're not allowed to cook on Shabbos, but how can you warm up food? How do you warm it up? It's what type of oven? The whole issue is that we're worried. You don't want to be put in a situation where you're going to stoke the coals.
I see.
So this whole thing and what's the status of? You have to worry about the food that you're.
That's his own mission right there.
Right. So that's already okay. So that this is shop, but we cover a lot of ground in one day. Here, what we've been doing is we're doing small amounts, and we're sitting and like discussing, and we're also trying to get our feet wet a little bit with this. It's a new. So here's the Hebrew version of the English that I gave you. Okay.
Okay.
And then I pull up here. This is the English version. Okay.
Got it. Okay. I'm good.
Good. So now this is here. The Gemara that we're looking at today is a complete side point. So it gets off on these tangents, but the tangents are very important.
Are they?
Yeah, of course they are, because they teach us important ideas. Are they?
As we start to understand the language, it gets a little bit easier.
I got it.
Another piece of Talmud during the week, and the two together, as we're doing this, it makes that a little bit easier just because of understanding.
All right, so we're good. I took up enough time.
But you should know, by the way, because I mentioned about learning Mishnah, right? So when you do Mishnayot, the Mishnah, it's cryptic. There are great translations now in English. Like the article came out with a new one that's fantastic. It's very readable. Really, there's no reason why, there's some background knowledge that maybe you need. But the more you do it, the more the base of knowledge that you acquire, then what happens is that a lot of these things are interwoven. So if you don't understand like the laws of, like we're talking about tithing, if you don't understand the laws of spiritual purity and impurity, and they get woven into these things, it's like, you know, like, for example, this exact case of when the Kohanim can eat from the Truma.
Right.
Like, what is that talking about? So if you had a prior knowledge by doing all the Mishnayot, and then you come to the Talmud, it's actually pulling all these things in together. It gets interesting.
Okay.
And then I did a Mishnah in Demai. It was so wild because building your knowledge of Demai, which Demai is, you have something called tithing. And if you bought something from someone who was not careful about tithing, so the rabbis created a law that said, I buy something from someone that's not trustworthy in that respect, so when I get it from him, I'm going to have to re-tithe it because I'm assuming that he didn't tithe. But the thing is that there are parts that he, even the layman will do because he's concerned about, and then there are other parts that he doesn't. And so you start, like, you know, then there are all these other laws and then different circumstances. It gets really interesting. But when you go through it step by step, and then you get to these, like, the crescendo, you go, wow, it's like wild how it, okay, fine.
All right.
So you have to be patient. So, don't get, you know.
I was just trying to get to some of the language understood and structure my mind about where
I was. No, so you got it. So, but now you have it, right? You got it now?
Got it.
Okay,
it,
good. Okay. So tangential to Rabbi Yochanan's statement that one who juxtaposes redemption and prayer is assured a place in the world to come. So we said last week, we were talking about the idea of smichas gulula tefila means that you're going to connect the passage, we say Shema, and after we say Shema in the morning, we have a number, we have a big blessing that leads us into the Amidah, into the Shemona Esrei. We call that taking the Geula, because the end blessing that we say right before we start Shemona Esrei is Baruch Atah Hashem, Ga'al Yisrael, blessed are you Hashem, who redeemed the Jewish people. And then we start saying the Hashem Tzvasai Tiftach, we start the Shemona Esrei, the standing, the Amidah. Which we really call, that's really like prayer. That's like when you stand in front of Hashem to pray. So that's connecting. We say that a person who connects the geula, the redemption, to prayer, he's assured a place in the world to come. So based on that, the Talmud here now brings down another idea of someone who does something who would actually get a share in the world to come. Rabbi Lezer said, this is at the top of the page here.
Who are you here?
This is at the top of the thing that I sent up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Said that, yeah.
So Rabbi Lezer said that Rabbi Avina said, anyone who recites a Psalm of David three times every day is assured a place in the world to come. So that is Ashrei. Ashrei Yoshev Veitecha.
Oh.
Od Yaluch HaSel, right? We say it twice in the morning and once before Mincha. So this statement extolling the significance of this particular chapter of Psalms, usually referred to as Ashrei, because its recitation is preceded by the recitation of the verse, Happy Ashrei are those, or fortunate are those, who dwell in your house. They praise you forever. Selah raised the question, what is the reason that such significance is ascribed to this particular chapter? So here the Talmud says, as a teaching, that says that if you say Ashrei three times a day, you're going to get a piece of the world to come. You're assured a place in the world to come. What's so special about this paragraph? So if you say it's because it is arranged alphabetically, so if you say it because the reason Ashrei is so special is because it was constructed alphabetically, meaning that each line starts with a different letter of the Hebrew alphabet. It goes Aleph, then Bet, then Gimel, then Dalet. So it's fine. If it's that, then let us say, happy are they who are upright in the way, where the alphabetical arrangement appears eight times. There's Psalm 119, which has, it goes Aleph, it has eight verses that start with Aleph, and then it goes with eight verses that start with the letter Bet, and Gimel, and et cetera, for the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet. It's a very long Psalm. So if we're saying that that's, if it's all about the alphabetical order, then what about this other psalm? Rather, if you suggest that this particular chapter is recited because it contains praise for God's provision of sustenance to all of creation, because it says, like you see, Poteach et yadecha u'matzbi'a l'chalchai ratzon, Hashem, he opens up his hands and he gives us sustenance. If that's the deal, then you open your hand and satisfy every living thing with favor, then let him recite the great Hallel, in which numerous praises are written, including who provides food to all flesh, whose kindness endures forever. Meaning, so what's so special, basically? The Talmud's basically saying, what's so special about this psalm that if you say it three times a day, you're getting a piece of the world to come? So the Gemara answers, rather, the reason why Tehillah LeDavid, Ashrei, is accorded preference is because it contains both an alphabetic acrostic, as well as mention of God's provision of sustenance to all creation. Okay? So now, yeah, what's it talking about? Right here is a question where you would ask, oops, not here. Sorry, that's not going to help us. Wrong one. Let's take this. I'm going to find you. Let me show you something interesting. So that we have to ask ourselves a question. Oh, come on. All right, let's do this. Okay, so I'm going to take you to this, and I'm going to show you a way to study here. So I come into, this is Safaria, okay? And I, one second. I'm going to bring us up to where we are right now. We're on, I think this is the beginning of 5A or a little bit before that. No, it's a little bit before it, okay? So, okay. So it's actually going back into 4B, okay? Okay. So we need to understand.
This is how I cheat.
No, but here, but I'm trying to show you. I'm here. When the Gemara says this idea. Here, let's see if it has it here. If it has something for us here. Okay. So, it's right in front of us. Here, I'm gonna move this over here. Okay.
You can find commentary in English too.
Yeah, but this one. But the question is like this. What I want to understand. When the Talmud tells us something that says, you say the psalm three times a day and poof, you're going to get a piece of the world to come. And then it tells us the reason is because of the fact that it's written in a certain alphabetic acrostic, meaning that each sentence starts with, it has the order of the Hebrew alphabet. That's, and then it also has within it, Poteach et Yadecha, that Hashem opens his hands and takes care of us. So the question is, why is that going to give us some kind of special place in the world to come? Isn't that strange? Like, what is it about this, right? It's almost like leaving us hanging here. So what do you think? I mean, what's so special about something being written in the Aleph Bay's order?
What's written in that order again?
Ashrei. This Ashrei. Ashrei's written in alphabetical order.
Well, that was actually going to be my question. Why is it so special to me? Except for the fact that it produces an order, that it shows the order of things. That's the only thing I could think of. Why is that so special? Why should it matter?
Right.
I think it's much more important, the other side of it, where God opens up his arms.
Okay, that's already the big one, right? So the idea that you're going to concentrate on the fact and give homage to the fact, the idea that, God is the one who gives us everything, that he's the source of our livelihood. So to do that three times a day, that already keys you in, connects us in a way that, meaning if the next world is really about being connected to like God, you're going into God's endlessness. When we go into the next world, the world to come is being connected to God. So then if a person's doing that already here by three times a day, reminding ourselves and having special concentration saying, He is the who opens his hands and gives us our sustenance, and you say that three times a day and you have the proper focus, that's a person that's a Ben Olam Haba, right? That's a person that's going to get, you're already keyed into what the Olam Haba is, right? The next world is that connection. You're connected to God in the proper way, right? You in a certain sense, worked in this world on creating that God awareness. So when you get to the place of all day God awareness, you're already like, you're like, you know, hey, I'm here because I'm used to this already. I've trained myself in that way. So what is this about the, what would you think about, why would it be that saying a psalm that has this Aleph Bet order, like what's that about? Like what is, why would that make you a person that's ready for the world to come?
No idea. But just by fact, by reciting it, the question is, if you recite this in this acrostic form, is it something about the actual words itself or the structure of the words?
Seems, I mean, so that's definitely telling us there's something about saying something in this order that you know, that gives you some meaning. There's something about the Aleph Bet order that is that has a very there's something to it. Meaning, it was easy, right, to say Poteach et Yadecha, to be able to like recognize the fact that God is the source of our sustenance on a daily basis. Saying that three times a day, we get that, right? That we're good with, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So the question is, what's this about the Aleph Bet? So the Aleph Bays is. I'll give you some background, okay? And then maybe you'll be able to answer it. So the Aleph Bet is the letters of creation. God created the world with, first things first, he created the world, it says, he said it, the 10 utterances. God said, and then it was. So more, even before the saying, is you have the building blocks of creation are the Hebrew alphabet, the Aleph Bet. Aleph Bet is Gimel Dalet, the 22 letters. That is the building blocks of creation. So,
Back up for a second. Are you saying that God created that or man created that?
God created that. God created the world. First thing he did was he created the alphabet.
Okay. It says that in the Torah?
I'm telling you what the rabbis teach us.
Okay.
Okay. Meaning, you have to understand something. To learn the first two chapters of Genesis, which talk about creation, If you're going to walk away from that and tell me that you know how God created the world, it's missing. There's at least if you read it straight through, you're not getting the full story. When you start to like look at it from a Kabbalistic way or from a more critical way of like reading the verses there. There's a lot between the lines, okay? So one of the ideas that on a Kabbalistic level, but when I say Kabbalistic, you should know, if you take out the Zohar, I would say like 90% of the time, is just looking at the text and is dissecting it and showing you that if you understand the text in its depth, all of it's there. But you need a way, you need a way of looking at the text to understand it properly. So when they look at the text, they're able to understand that there are building blocks in creation. There are things that are just not in the, I mean, there are things that are filled in, let's say, but a lot of it is just parsing the words and the letters. But in the Kabbalistic understanding is that the world was created first from building blocks. There were letters, and then letters became words, and then words became sayings, which then God said, let there be, and there was, okay? But that the building blocks of creation were actually the letters of the Hebrew alphabet.
Oh, okay.
And that actually, in Hebrew, when you look at any word, the word expresses the essence of the thing. The most incredible thing about creation and the creation story is that God brings to Adam each animal and asks him to name those animals.
So and Adam named the animals.
Adam, right. So here God gives man the ability to understand things, and that Adam has the ability at the beginning, his incredible, like here's God's first, like the apex of creation is man, and Adam is brought every animal, and he names each animal in it by looking at its essence. But where he got that from, the building blocks of creation were the letters, which begot the words, which begot the sentences, became, so like everything is built on what's the kernel, what's the atom, what's the molecule.
The basic unit.
The first is the letters, okay? So when you understand, so now, when we understand that the building blocks of creation are the letters, and now you give me a psalm that actually has it built in an acrostic based on the ABCs, the Aleph Bet Gimel of the Hebrew language, and I say that three times a day, then I'm keying in on this, the building block of creation. So, Potech et Yadecha, I open up my hands, God opens up his hands and he supplies us our sustenance. That's one thing. That I'm keying into three times a day. I'm recognizing the fact that God is the one who gives us all of our needs, etc. But when I say, when I recite this psalm that's built on the acrostic of Aleph Bet, which is the building blocks of creation, and I say that three times a day, then I'm a Ben Olam Haba. Then I'm a person who's destined for the next world also, because I see within the fabric of creation, I'm looking at it, I'm going back to that building block of the ABCs, the ABC of creation. So so here you have a teaching that says that there are two reasons that first it comes out with this generic statement, a person who says Ashrei three times a day, he's a guy who's destined for the next world. Why? Well, the Gemara says there are two reasons. Why? One is because you're saying the sentence of he opens up his hands and he sustains us. But also it's because it's an acrostic based on the ABCs, the Aleph Bet. And I say that three times a day. So what? Who cares? The answer is because the ABCs, the Aleph Bet, is the building block of creation. Okay? So therefore, being that it's the building block of creation, and I key in and I understand that, I'm starting to go back to the roots of what everything is based on. That's what we're saying. So that when I say this three times a day, and I have in mind that it's the Aleph Beis, it follows the ABC, and it has the Poteach et Yadecha, I'm going to the core of what everything is. I'm keying in on the roots. The roots of creation, the roots of everything that the world is. The world is based on on God. God is our, he sustains us, and he created this thing from the beginning. I'm keying in, I'm starting with the seeds, so to speak, the seeds of creation. And when I do that three times a day, and now I know, based on this analysis, okay, now I get it. So three times a day, I'm going to come to this paragraph of Ashrei, and I'm supposed to focus on two things. First, I'm supposed to, follow the meaning of the words. I'll open it up and I'll read it through and I'll say, okay, well, fortunate us, I'm praising God and he, all these nice things that are in that paragraph. But the fact that it's built on the Aleph Bet structure is taking me back and I'm sensitizing myself to the fact that the building blocks of creation goes back to the letters of the Hebrew alphabet. Right, the letters, that's the starting point. And that's what, when we talk about Hebrew, today Hebrew is a modern language. It's already right. Half the time I can't read it because it's taking an English word and it's Hebrewizing it. So when I get to those, it's like, I remember when I was in, like years ago, I was reading an article in the Ma'ariv newspaper in Hebrew and I got stuck on this word. I'm like, Nasi Bush. It's like George Bush, like the President Bush. I couldn't read that word because it's like, it's not a Hebrew word. It's an English word in Hebrew. But Hebrew in the Tanakh, in the Torah, that's what we call Lashon Kodesh. It's holy. It's holy. Why? Because that's pure, and that language is the basis of creation, and it has in it the depth of the meaning of things in the deepest way. And it starts with the letters, so that the letters have this incredible power as the seeds, as the building blocks of everything. So the fact that the Ashrei is built on that has significance. It's not just some throwaway. It's not some cute, like, poetic thing, but rather it has a very deep meaning. So that a person recites the Ashrei because it has this attribute of being in the Aleph Bet structure, and it has, you open your hands and you sustain us, and I say that three times a day, and you get into that, your mindset's there, you're a person who's destined for the next world.
Well, what you're talking about, interesting, that the letters are the building blocks of the world, is when you learn in biology that DNA, the structure of DNA, is this combination of these letters. Right?
Remember? Right.
Like A and T, adenine, thymine, cytosine, guanine, those are the building, those pattern of letters, and combinations of the letters, make these genes, and the genes then are built upon to create proteins, and the proteins are creating the cell, and that the building blocks of life are these letters.
Right. So you see that. It's like an incredible, and the other thing that's wild is that what we're saying also, we say it, we make a reference to this in the davening every morning, is that God like literally renews the world every morning or every day or every moment, really. But to the point of where it's God's utterance, when God said, let there be, that utterance is constantly happening and constantly sustaining the world. It actually, the world exists based on the fact that there is this like energy. Like I'm reading now, I just started reading Schroeder, but also talking about science and Torah and how it integrates. And you start to see, like, you know, physics and, the different advances that discoveries in science, when you open your mind up to it and then you start looking at the Kabbalistic understanding of things, it's unbelievable.
They're very akin.
Totally. Oh, it's incredible. That's why it's sad when people are afraid to open their eyes to and embrace it. Torah and science go together perfectly.
They do very
well. It's the problem is that there are people that are afraid to embrace the science and then bring it back or go both ways because it's all there. It actually enhances. It's not anything to be afraid of. It's if anything, you have to like open your minds to all these things and see how they integrate. We're not afraid of questions. It's unfortunate when there are people groups that are, it creates a problem. I actually have to like end it here.
I'm sorry, I took so much time.
No, it's not a problem. It's just I have to. Alana's giving a class at 10:30,